living with a chronic condition can be stressful, painful, and expensive. But if medical professionals either don't take your symptoms seriously or can't figure out what's wrong, that adds fear and uncertainty to the experience. For those individuals, they are either not given a diagnosis at all or are told that they have what amounts to a none-of-the-above disease, and that can complicate getting care and getting it paid for. Ed Cara is a Brooklyn-based journalist who writes about psychology, sociology, and public health. His recent article for UnDark about living with medical uncertainty is posted on the Central Time Facebook page. Ed, welcome to Central Time.
All right. Thanks so much for having me on, Judith.
Ed, what types of symptoms seem to be the most common in people who are difficult to diagnose?
You know, it's really sort of the vague kind of sickness that someone might associate. So fatigue, tiredness, body aches, just anything that you really can't pin down. That's typically what these kind of people tend to have.
And what are the catch-all terms that are often used to describe this set of conditions when doctors don't have other answers?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's all sorts. There's a diagnosis of exclusion, the none of the above kind of disease. There's contested illnesses, medically unexplained symptoms. It's just a whole litany of terms and labels you can put to it. But it all really means the same thing. It's like, we don't know what's wrong with you, basically.
And there are some conditions that have names, but it feels like, first of all, they've become much more commonly used in the last maybe couple decades and seem rather vague, like those symptoms you were saying. I'm thinking of things like chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or irritable bowel syndrome also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and these are also names that not just doctors, but patients sort of gravitate towards. They sort of see it as a thing to reach towards. Like I have chronic fatigue, and that, even though that doesn't really answer exactly what's wrong with them, it does sort of give them a placeholder, like, okay, this is what I have, and maybe that makes living with what I have a little bit easier.
And maybe it also makes them feel like I have this and I'm not alone because there are other people who identify as having this condition also.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a sense of how many people are receiving these broad diagnoses that really, when you look at it, mean that doctors are at a loss for a real answer?
It's incredibly hard to tell. The amount of people who are diagnosed with chronic fatigue is much lower than what we think might have some amount of that. So some estimates are like as high as 3%, but that's nowhere near the number of people who are actually diagnosed or given that label. Same thing goes for irritable bowel syndrome or fibromyalgia. But it could be anywhere from 1 to 10% of the population has some sort of medically unexplained syndrome.
And there has certainly been a history of women's health concerns being discounted or minimized by the medical establishment. Do we have a sense of whether women are more often given these diagnoses or not given a diagnosis?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's definitely a mix of both. Women since the 1800s have been given this sort of label that their ailments or their ills are more mental. So when they are sick in a strange way that we don't understand, they just sort of tend to get more shunted into that pile. It wasn't too long ago that women were called hysterics for having just everyday symptoms. And sometimes not even being sick, just being different than other people, they would be called hysterical for that. So that's still something that's ongoing now. And it's especially prominent among middle-class white women.
What are some of the most common challenges that people dealing with these conditions shared with you?
Disbelief. Disbelief is definitely the sort of thing. As much as we might not like going to the doctor, we still have an enormous amount of trust in them, in the medical system. So when we aren't given that validation, when we aren't treated as sick by the people that we trust, their expert opinion, it makes it that much harder for anyone else to believe. And that just tends to lead to isolation and stress. And if the stress doesn't get them, if they aren't already psychologically unwell, then that, strangely enough, can make them even worse. That can exacerbate their mental health.
We're talking with Ed Cara right now. His recent article for UnDark magazine is about living with medical uncertainty and having a diagnosis of a none-of-the-above disease, and that's posted over on the Central Time Facebook page. Ed, you start out your article giving a very intimate look at two sisters who in different ways have dealt with this kind of situation. Tell us a little bit of their story to kind of illustrate what this really means in a person's life.
Sure. So the Arianna and Sarah Cohen, two fraternal sisters, fraternal twins, they grew up just being different, feeling different than one another. And one of the strange things about them in particular is that because they were twins, you know, close siblings, they, unlike so many other people I've talked to and researched, they actually never really believed that they were going crazy, or, you know, that word. You know, they always knew, and their mother always believed in them. They had a good, strong support system. But that didn't prevent them from dealing with skepticism and disbelief from their doctors. You know, they would go, they had hundreds of tests done, spent up to $500,000 in medical bills. And up until they were 18, they still just did not have any answer as to what was wrong with them. You know, they'd come home school with very strange injuries that wouldn't heal for months at a time. They'd have just lockjaw, allergies to things that no normal person would have. And a lot of that was just sort of blamed on you know, what they went through, a very traumatic experience. They lost their father as they were growing up in their teens, you know, a long, couple-year-long battle with cancer that ultimately, you know, ended in death. And so a lot of what was going on with them was just sort of blamed with them dealing with stress. And it wasn't until they became adults, really, that they managed to get a grasp on something tangible to explain what was going on with them.
And what was found? What were they finally given as a diagnosis?
So they were given sort of one of these none of the above diseases, something called, the main woman featured in the piece, Arianna. She was given a diagnosis of irritable bowel syndrome and other conditions that we have a name for, but we don't necessarily know the cause of. So they also had something called the Iordanou's syndrome, which is a sort of a joint condition that makes them incredibly susceptible to injuries, dislocation, and then they have incredibly fragile skin. But even when they had those names, even when it was like, this is something we know, it would still take another six years before they stumbled on to the sort of research that I go into later, mm-hmm. that sort of more explains what might be going on with them.
And Ariella, as I recall, went to the hospital literally afraid that she was in danger of dying and wasn't even examined by a doctor. He just looked mm-hmm. at her, thought she looked fine, and sent her home.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and she's particularly, you know, it doesn't talk about it so much in the piece, but she's an incredibly tough individual. And it's very hard, you know, when I spoke with her, you know, she just seemed a very feisty individual. And there, you could not tell that she's dealing with so much almost constant chronic pain and fatigue. And it's just, she just sort of comes off as a bubbly, feisty person. And it's hard to tell. It's hard to look for what sickness looks like when it doesn't look stereotypical.
How does a nonspecific diagnosis or lack of a diagnosis affect people's ability to get testing done, to get treatments, medications, and to get that covered by insurance?
Sure. So doctors sort of have a term for these kind of patients. They call them medicalized patients, where they assume, perhaps wrongly, perhaps rightly sometimes, that these patients aren't satisfied with one test. So they go around from doctor to doctor trying to get an answer. And so they look at these patients with a little bit of suspicion. They sort of think they're nuts, basically. So they makes it incredibly hard for you to go to a doctor and get, you know, you sort of just get laughed out or you aren't given the test that you think you might need. And it's a very difficult tension because to the doctor, you know, it seems like this patient doesn't appear to be physically sick. So, the Occam's razor is that they are mentally sick. So you might not want them to waste more time and effort. But to the patient, you know, they're just trying to get answers. And it's a very, very difficult struggle between both of them. And it just leaves a lot of people, you know, out on the cold, not being able to visit a doctor or get any more tests because they just are barred from it.
I think it's a vicious cycle because these patients, these people who are not getting a diagnosis or not a correct diagnosis or not feeling like their concerns are being heard often have to become their own best advocate, as you were talking about the sisters, and they have to advocate for themselves and educate themselves about maybe what's new and what's out there for treatments. But then, as you said, when they go to the doctor and say, I want this, I want to try that, then the doctor kind of rebels against that, almost that challenge to their knowledge and authority. And so it seems like it creates a really unhelpful dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there are real concerns about people, you know, turning to the internet or using other sources to sort of be their own, you know, doctors. You know, there is a lot of misinformation out there, and there are a lot of kooky things out there that, you know, are dangerous for patients to believe in. But at the same time, you know, our healthcare system, we don't really have a way to take care of these patients the way we might want to. One of the more surprising things I found in interviewing a lot of these people, and not just Ariana, but other people that I didn't get to feature, is that they were perfectly fine with doctors who didn't know what was wrong with them, as long as they were honest about that, as long as they were open about what they did and didn't know, and they would help them in no matter where they could. But what they faced more often than not was sort of this, if I don't know what the answer is, then the answer is not something medically sound. There's something wrong with their mind, not their body, because I don't know, I can't find it, it must be wrong with their mind. So that leaves a lot of more distrust between the patients and the doctors. And I think there's a lot of room for a more collaborative partnership between these patients and the doctors that are out there.
Ed Cara is a Brooklyn-based journalist who writes about psychology, sociology, and public health. His recent article for Undark magazine about living with medical uncertainty is posted on the Central Time Facebook page. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you living with a condition that has been hard for doctors to pin down? How has that affected your quality of life and your trust in the medical profession? If you've been trying to get an accurate diagnosis, what have been the most frustrating parts of the experience? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Right now, we're continuing the conversation with Ed Cara. He's a Brooklyn-based journalist who writes about psychology, sociology, and public health. His recent article for Undark about living with medical uncertainty is over on the Central Time Facebook page. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you living with a chronic condition that was difficult to diagnose? Or are you still trying to get answers as to what you're dealing with? Who's been the best ally for you, and how have your interactions with the medical profession been? What do you wish that doctors knew about what you're experiencing? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Ed, let's go to our callers, and Karen in Eau Claire is up first. Hi, Karen.
Hi. So I was in a car accident 4.5 years ago. I was rear-ended, and I have had numerous problems since then. Some of them, I guess the thing is, I keep saying to my husband that I've never felt the same since the day of that car accident. I had a concussion, whiplash, tore my shoulder, screwed up my foot. In the midst of it, I found out I had breast cancer. The list goes on. But I was finally diagnosed with fibromyalgia, chronic pain, whatever. And, you know, as soon as I get diagnosed with that, it isn't just too much longer, then all those fibromyalgia symptoms just go away. Hmm. Where did they go? I don't know. I recently spent almost 5 weeks in a balance study program because my balance has been so dramatically affected. Was it from the concussion? I don't know. Was it from fibromyalgia? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Karen. And Ed, Karen's situation and call reminds me of something you wrote, that there's really a growing understanding that illness is incredibly complex and that it's rare that a condition happens in isolation. Is that something you kept running into in writing this piece?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just that when we think of sickness, we think of something being wrong with the body. But, you know, our bodies, they have nicks and bruises every day. And it's just there's so much, there's a giant puzzle to our body and the ways it can go wrong. You know, we just don't know all the ways it can go wrong. And we don't know how the mind affects the body entirely just yet. So, you know, one of the diseases that I write about, you know, the lead researcher, he's had patients come in where, like, their symptoms didn't start until they had some sort of great trauma in their lives. You know, sometimes it would be an injury that would just sort of jumpstart this chain reaction of events that would lead to their bodies just misbehaving in all these strange ways.
Thanks for that call, Karen. And let's go back to the phones. And Narissa in Barron is up. Hi, Narissa.
Hi. This is a great conversation. I really appreciate it. In 1998, I was diagnosed with IBS-C. Well, basically because they couldn't figure out what was wrong, and it was in a very small town. And then as I moved to the city, and my symptoms just got worse. It was just awful. I mean, it'd be a month of just nothing. And
so, just so our listeners know, you're talking about irritable
bowel syndrome.
Bowel syndrome.
The constipation form. And at the time, they didn't even know that there was a difference between constipation or diarrhea. Mm. They just called it IBS, and they're like, well, we don't know how to treat it, and you're on your own. And as things progressed and I became more and more sick, I saw more doctors, and one specifically, he really tried to help after this fact, but when I first saw him, I was crying. I was in so much pain. I had been so ill that I had actually retched out my intestines. I had pulled the muscles in them. They couldn't figure out why, and it was because I wasn't digesting, and they couldn't figure out any of that. And he was yelling at me just because he couldn't see what was wrong, and I was crying because I was in so much pain. And then the next time I saw him, I was much more situated and very calm, and he was like, well, something must have happened. You're so much calmer now. And I'm like, well, I was scared. I was scared. Mm-hmm. Who retches out their intestines? Mm-hmm. And then eventually I saw a holistic doctor. I got sick of it all. My insurance dropped me. I'm uninsurable in so many ways. And so I saw a holistic doctor, and over time they figured out that it was actually my pancreas, which is very difficult to diagnose. It takes years and years, like, you know, 17 years actually, for my pancreas to actually fail, for them to figure out that that was what was wrong.
Thanks so much for that call, Narissa. And Ed, is Narissa's story striking a chord with what you've heard?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I, in my own writing, you know, I've always been very critical of sort of this alternative in holistic medicine. And, you know, I think there is definitely room for improvement in you know, self-checking against the industry, self-checking itself. But at the same time, you know, there are many stories of people who turn to these other practitioners and find relief. And a lot of that, you know, isn't just the mechanics of what particular thing you're going for. It's more that these doctors or these practitioners have more time to you know, be involved with their patients. You know, one of the sisters, she writes about how, or she told me about how she interned with a homeopath who got to spend, you know, 2-3 times the amount of time with her patients than a regular doctor would have. And regardless of what you think of homeopathy, you know, that means something. When someone can be involved in the medical care of someone for much longer, that just tends to lead to a better outcome. You know, and that's not the doctor's fault, really. You know, that's just sort of our healthcare system right now. So, you know, all the answers you can find and all the medical research you can do, it's only half of the picture. Like, you need a proper healthcare system that can take care of these patients, you know, as complicated as they are.
Ed, in your article, you talk about a new area of research that could make a significant difference for some people, at least, who are currently diagnosed with a none-of-the-above disease. Tell us about that new research into mast cells.
Sure. So, you know, mast cells are part of the immune system, and mast cells play a part in the chain reaction of things that help us react to germs, parasites. But in allergies, allergies are just sort of the immune system not doing its job. They also play a part in that. So for the longest time, doctors thought that mast cells misbehave on the skin, you know, and when they do that, you know, we can get skin rashes, we can get strange allergies, but it was a very relatively rare condition. More recently, though, doctors are starting to realize that mast cells can behave in more than one way. And because mast cells are everywhere in the body, from our skin to our brain, this leads to the vague number of symptoms that people have. You know, some people have had this almost dementia-like state that might be the result of a mast cell dysfunction. And that's that. Right now, there's been a lot of headway made in mast cell research, to the point where it's finally being recognized as a potential sort of disease. It is recognized as a disease now, whereas, you know, 10, 20 years ago, people who had this thing, you know, they had no answers. And, you know, there are now centers in the United States where you can go and you can be diagnosed. You can be successfully diagnosed for a mast cell issue. And that wouldn't have been possible more than a decade ago.
And looking into the future, how long a timeline are should we anticipate before this kind of technology and the knowledge that's being developed might be widely used?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that is sort of the disappointing part. One of the practitioners I talked to who diagnoses mast cells issues, you know, she referenced research showing that even when a disease becomes known, you know, when the first time we discover it or we have a name for it, it can still take more than a decade, you know, 15, 17 years before it becomes medically mainstream. And right now in the U.S., there are only 3-4 centers, like in the entire country, where you can get diagnosed with mast cell issues. And I referenced genetic research in the piece too. And there's only one place in the United States where you can get tested for that. And even if you do, you don't necessarily have the answers needed. So this is still, you know, this is the very beginning of this sort of research. And it might be decades before we can reliably test and diagnose and prevent this sort of disease.
A caller in Madison, Maurice, said, if what you have isn't measurable with tests, then doctors don't seem to care. And Ed, do you think that there is a growing understanding, maybe, or appreciation in the medical field that, you know, maybe it's not all black and white. It's either this or it's nothing. Maybe, you know, maybe it's this, but it wasn't there before because the person hadn't gone through that stressful episode. Do you feel like the medical profession is developing in those ways?
Inertia, there's a lot of medical inertia that just sort of takes a while for things to change. But I do think there has been a growing cultural shift in how we look at health and how we appreciate it. One of the sisters, in fact, is going to become a doctor, or actually has graduated from medical school. And she and her sister, one of the more inspirational moments is they gave a lecture to a bunch of medical students, and a lot of them seemed receptive to this idea that not knowing anything or not knowing the answer to something it's not the end of the road. You know, you can still work with your patient to provide them the best kind of health care that you can and wait for the answers to come along.
And Ed, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Ed Cara is a Brooklyn-based journalist writing about psychology, sociology, and public health. His recent article for UnDark about living with a none-of-the-above disease is posted over on the Central Time Facebook page.